This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Flooding across Australia's northeast is continuing to cause chaos and shows no sign of abating. The country has now recorded its wettest spring. An area bigger than France and Germany combined has been affected.
The second wave of winter is heading into northern Britain today. Severe weather warnings have been issued for Scotland, Northern England, Northern Ireland, Wales and southwest England.
Heavy snowfall is blanketing large parts of China. A cold weather front from Siberia has made temperatures in the north plunge to a deep freeze.
We've challenged the orthodoxy surrounding global warming theories and questioned more evidence on the side of the ice age in prospect. In point of fact, research, some of it shows that we could be heading toward cooler temperatures, and it's a story you will only see here on Lou Dobbs Tonight.
I mean, it proves beyond any reasonable doubt that the actual science of global warming, irrelevant.
We all talk about the weather, and there has been more weather to talk about. Millions of people check with the Weather Underground for the latest. They want the color charts, the maps, satellite photos, and the big picture from Dr. Jeff Masters. As a meteorologist, Jeff was a hurricane hunter flying with the National Oceans and Atmospheric Administration, those planes out of Miami. He flew right into the big storms like Gilbert and finally Hurricane Hugo. In 1995, Masters co-founded a website to make real-time sense of raw data pouring out of the National Weather Service. This week, the Weather Underground was number 57 for traffic out of all the internet sites in the world. It's huge. Now, we do need some answers about the mega rains, strange hot summers, and blustery northern winters. It's a treat to have Dr. Jeff Masters join us on Radio EcoShock. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Alex.
Well, welcome to the program. You know, everyone wants to know how the Northern Hemisphere got so cold and with all that snow after one of the hottest years on record. But before we go to that, let's quickly skip to that other emergency happening on the other side of the planet. Tell us about the epic floods in Queensland, Australia.
They've had some rather remarkable rains, not just during the past couple weeks, but for the last 3 or 4 months. The spring season, which runs in the months of September, October, November, that was the rainiest period ever in 118 years of records in Australia. They got just mind-boggling amounts of rain, up to 4 feet of rain along the coast of Queensland there during those 3 months. And then December continued that rainy period. Once again, heavy rain several feet in some areas along the coast there. And finally, the straw that broke the camel's back in one part of the region was a tropical cyclone called Tasha that moved ashore on Christmas Day, dumping another foot of rain over some parts of Queensland. As a result, the rivers in the area flooded to some of the highest levels ever seen and have caused the isolation of one fairly large city along the coast, Rockhampton, with a population of 75,000, and they're having to boat in materials now, food and water, because you just can't get there via any other way.
Is there a connection between those Australian floods and the huge downpours we saw this year in Pakistan and China?
You know, it's difficult to answer that question because we simply don't have good enough records worldwide to say, well, what are the records being set for flooding amounts and comparing that to other regions where maybe you're not getting as much rain. But one thing we do know is that over the last 40 years, the amount of moisture in the atmosphere as a whole has gone up about 4% just due to global warming. A warmer atmosphere holds more water vapor. More water vapor tends to cause heavier rainfalls. In particular, the very heavy rainfall events, the ones that are, say, in the 99th percentile for heaviness, those are the ones that preferentially see an increase when you get all that extra moisture in the air. The average run-of-the-mill type precipitation events don't increase. So the type of flooding events we're seeing over the past year are consistent with what we'd expect to see in a warming world.
What about the blizzards in the U.S. and that record cold in Britain and the heavy snow throughout northern Europe? Is that just normal winter or is it something else?
Well, it's pretty abnormal winter. Northern Ireland in the British Isles, they recorded their coldest temperature on record ever in December. They hit minus 18 centigrade. They've never been that cold before. And certainly over Florida, they've had their coldest December ever, to go with one of the coldest January-February periods on record. But you stated earlier that we're talking about record cold in the Northern Hemisphere. We're talking about record cold just in some portions of the Northern Hemisphere. If you look at the Northern Hemisphere as a whole, the stats aren't in yet for December, but I'm sure it's going to be near record warmth. In fact, November was the warmest November on record globally. So you have to be careful talking about record cold because it's not hitting it everywhere. What we're seeing is a very unusual circulation in the atmosphere over the Northern Hemisphere, which is drawing a lot of cold air downward from the Arctic, but at the same time, it's allowing warm air to flow into the Arctic, making for record high temperatures there.
Right. You can't even get a skating rink to work in Quebec, Canada right now, and even further north where there are no cameras, no weather stations to speak of, and very few people. It was up to 15 degrees Celsius higher than normal, and that really didn't hit the papers here. Even Canadians didn't know about that.
Yes, that's a result of the fact that there's been a very unusual amount of Arctic sea ice loss over the waters of northeastern Canada this fall and in the early winter. And where you have that uncovered water, where usually there's ice, that means there's a lot of heat going into the atmosphere, and that heat stays there and helps warm up the land temperatures. And both last winter, which was the warmest winter on record in Canada, and now again this winter, you're seeing the effect of that sea ice loss, keeping the temperatures abnormally warm through Canada.
But I have seen different explanations for that. Some people say the jet stream has moved. We had an explanation in the New York Times that excess snow in Siberia was pushing the weather patterns around. How sure are we that the sea ice loss is impacting the climate further south?
It's difficult to separate out all these impacts because, yes, like you say, there's many natural factors as well. There's a pattern in the atmosphere called El Niño and La Niña, which is this periodic 2 to 7 year cycle in the tropical Pacific where you get alternating cold and warm waters. Those patterns affect the jet stream path, which affects the amount of cold air in Canada or wherever throughout the Northern Hemisphere. And yeah, like you said, there's snowfall in Siberia also has a big impact on global weather patterns in winter and where the position of the jet stream happens to occur. But what we do know is that large-scale changes in the temperature of the oceans, like this El Niño-La Niña pattern, do affect the weather and the climate. So it should not be a surprise to us if Arctic sea ice loss, which is uncovering huge amounts of the Arctic Ocean so that they're exposed to the air now, that should also be causing similar large-scale impacts on the weather and climate. Now, we don't have enough experience over the past few years to determine, you know, just exactly what that fingerprint is, and what we're seeing is difficult to quantify as far as, okay, what's the natural impact here and what's the impact of Arctic sea ice loss? It's just too new of a phenomena for us to be sure exactly what's going on. But I'm confident that Arctic sea ice loss does have a major factor in explaining the abnormal coldness, perhaps not of this current week, but maybe last winter and a portion of this winter.
Well, it seems pretty obvious the world climate has been destabilized to some extent, and science is really playing a catch-up trying to understand just how sensitive this system is. What if we get a few quiet years in terms of storms and floods and heat? If the climate moves in uneven steps instead of a steady progression the way most of the UN charts have been showing, we might lose focus. We might forget about climate change for a little bit. So do we know what to expect next year or even in the next 5 years?
Well, that's a good point, because if you look at 2009 as a whole, that year was relatively quiet as far as weather disasters go. Insurers paid out less than half of what they usually do for weather-related climate disasters. And I would expect that perhaps this year, 2011, might be the same way. I mean, you've got these natural ups and downs, natural variability in the weather and climate system due to chaos. And, yeah, that makes it difficult to determine that, hey, we're steadily progressing towards a more radical climate or a destabilizing climate. And I think that we do need to keep in mind that the atmosphere doesn't go in that nice steady progression like you were saying. And the risk that I see, or the worry I have, is that if we look at Earth's past climate, the relatively stable climate of the past 10,000 years is an anomaly. It doesn't normally do that. The climate normally takes big, giant swings, you know, sometimes in the period of just a few years. So we could easily snap into a completely different climate system in a relatively short period of time, just a couple of years, where suddenly the atmosphere rearranges itself into a new stable or relatively stable pattern where the jet stream moves, the typical paths of the storms take rainfall to different locations. We get drought places we're not used to seeing drought, and we get heavy rains where we're not used to seeing rains. So I think that sort of adjustment is going to occur, maybe not in the next few years, more likely at least 10 years from now, but it could occur at any time.
Well, I know that scientists have been predicting extreme rainfall events for some time. We've had guests here on Radio EcoShock saying, watch out for global wetting, if you want to call it that. It's the other half of the whole climate change picture. But most of us thought this might happen by 2100 or even 2040 at the earliest. It seems to be coming much sooner than we thought. Would that be your impression?
Yes, I think it is coming sooner than we thought. We've been looking at these climate models that are subject to considerable criticism, but you have to realize that these climate models, while they're not perfect, I mean, they have problems with their physics. The physics aren't quite good enough in them. They're not accurately representing what the climate system's doing, and they're not detailed enough. I mean, the computer power is steadily increasing, but the climate models need to get even more detailed as computer power increases so that they'll be good enough. And the climate models aren't good enough. They're not able to resolve some of these finer scale processes going on and some of these unknown things going on. And they're consistently underestimating what the impact of human-caused climate change is. None of the climate models, for instance, foresaw the collapse of Arctic sea ice the way we've seen it over the last 3 or 4 years. So, yeah, we are seeing things we didn't expect, and the watchword is expect surprises, and certainly this winter and last winter was a surprise to all climate scientists.
From my perspective, part of the problem, too, is the media lens. I mean, one reason 9/11 was so overpowering, it happened in New York at the American News Hub with live cameras mounted and ready. And this latest surprising winter weather is hitting New York and London and Berlin, Moscow, Beijing, all the biggest news centers. So we don't hear about the extra heat in South America and for a while not even in Canada. Reading that mass media, I could be forgiven for thinking the whole world is cooling, is it?
No. I mean, November was the warmest November on record, and that was despite the fact that the sun is putting out less energy than it has since we've been measuring it, and also despite the fact that we have one of these cooling events in the Pacific going on, the La Nina. Now, it's really remarkable to me that the month of November was the warmest month on record, despite those two factors which should have been dragging it down. And we'll see what the stats for December say, which are coming out just in a few days now. And it's pretty sure that the entire year, 2010, is going to wind up being the first or second warmest year on record, going back to the late 1800s.
Our guest is Dr. Jeff Masters from the Weather Underground. Jeff, it makes me wonder how long TV weather people can keep reporting these extraordinary events without ever mentioning the words climate change. It's kind of a joke around our house. We wait to see if anything like that is said. It's not. We see a long string of horrible records, and it's all just captioned weird weather. It's like it's a string of accidents with no cause. Do you have any predictions on when the mass media will really tell people what is happening here?
Well, as everyone's pretty familiar with, the climate change issue has gotten politicized. So TV weather people generally steer away from it, or a lot of times they take a skeptical point of view. In fact, I saw one poll showing that TV meteorologists tend to be maybe 50-50 on the issue. They're even more skeptical than the general public on the issue of climate change. Now, I don't really understand that very well, why that may be. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to see that change until there is an obvious imminent disaster that's due to climate change. This is what happened during the whole ozone hole crisis back in the 1980s. Well, there was a lot of scientific controversy from papers published earlier, you know, saying that, okay, well, chlorofluorocarbons and the refrigerants coming out of refrigerator systems are going to cause destruction of the ozone layer, and nobody cared really much about it or did anything until finally there was this huge hole that was found over Antarctica in the ozone layer, and everybody kind of woke up and said, whoa, you know, this is bad stuff. We better take action. So I think something equivalent to the Antarctic ozone hole is going to have to happen before anything is done, and perhaps that will be the complete collapse of Arctic sea ice in the next few years. We'll see if the site of the North Pole open to water to let Santa's workshop splash into the waves will wake people up. I think that is going to happen in the next decade, but whether it'll be enough to trigger action, we'll see. Maybe not.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Dr. Jeff Masters, one of the most influential meteorologists on the net, with the Weather Underground at wonderground.com. Jeff, in our November 19th, 2010 Radio EcoShock show, Dr. Tim Garrett from the University of Utah said climate change is really a long-term natural disaster. He suggested weather extremes produce, quote, an ever-increasing environmental pressure on civilization that continually acts as an ever-stronger force that eats away at what we have produced in the past. And when I heard that, I thought of the storm drains overwhelmed in England, the levees breaking in the United States, unhealed scars of massive flooding in Pakistan, the crops burned out in Russia. Is it possible extreme weather alone, driven by climate change, could slowly drag down the global economy?
Yeah, I think that's likely. I think that's probably at least 10 years away. But I expect 30 years from now, there's going to be a global emergency where we're just going to be overwhelmed by the large numbers of global weather disasters happening that will strain the system. Certainly the relief system is going to have trouble trying to respond to all these disasters, and crop failures are going to be a huge issue too. How are we going to feed all these people that are going to be suffering from floods and droughts? And we still have the issue of overpopulation. The population's continuing to expand, and even without climate change, we're going to bump up against the limit of there's just not enough water on the planet for everybody to have. So the future does look like it's going to be limited by the weather, the climate, the amount of water available, and we're living in the golden age kind of right now. We've got a period of difficult struggles coming up that is going to be a trial for much of the world's population to live through.
I suspect we won't be able to buy insurance anymore. It will be so expensive, only billionaires will buy it. And most people in the developing world, of course, they don't have any insurance. When they're wiped out, they've got to start from scratch. I'm wondering, do you have a couple of weather events that happened in 2010 that you feel were really underreported that you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, I'd say the number one underreported weather event was the drought in the Amazon. This is the second 100-year drought in the Amazon in the last 5 years. And just 1 year after the main tributary, the Amazon River, had its highest flood level on record, that same tributary, the Rio Negro, had its lowest level on record. So they went straight from extreme flood to extreme drought. And if that isn't a encapsulation of what we expect, you know, the future of climate change to be, I don't know what is. That is a troublesome thing, because the reason that that drought occurred was not because of the usual reason, which is El Nino, but the drought was due to extremely warm Atlantic sea surface temperatures, which is a new thing that area hasn't experienced before. Both the 2005 and 2010 droughts were thought to be due to this relatively new mechanism. And if that continues to occur in the future, I mean, we expect the sea surface temperatures to continue to rise. I mean, we could lose significant portions of the Amazon. They may simply just burn down and not be viable as a tropical rainforest anymore. And that's bad for the planet, because that ecosystem pulls out a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and helps keep the planet cooler.
You used to be a storm chaser for the government. What do we know about the future of storms as we go along adding greenhouse gases?
You know, storms are kind of one of my lesser concerns. I mean, they are a concern because the strongest storms are going to get stronger, both hurricanes and winter storms. So they're going to have heavier downpours. They're going to cause bigger storm surges. But we do expect that the number of those storms is going to decrease. So one interesting thing that maybe also was underreported this year is for 2010, we saw the fewest number of tropical cyclones on record for the planet in 2010. Now, that is consistent with what climate change models have been predicting, that we will see a decrease in the number of these storms, but maybe an increase in the very strongest storms. So, yeah, storms are a concern, but I don't think it's the number one concern. My number one concern is drought followed by heavy flooding.
Our guest is super weatherman Jeff Masters, and unfortunately we are running out of time. Jeff, is there something you would like to add for our listeners?
Well, you know, I would say enjoy our 2011 weather that we have this year. There aren't going to be a whole lot more relatively stable weather years coming up if you look at the long term. I think over the next decade, most of the years will probably be relatively stable like we're used to, but we're going to see an increasing number of years like 2010, and we'll look back maybe 30 years from now at 2010 thinking, wow, you know, that was relatively quiet. So enjoy our weather while you can. It certainly is a beautiful thing that holds tremendous fascination for me, and I look forward to reporting on it for everyone over the coming decades.
I think you have a lot of work ahead of you. Jeff Masters blogs The Record Set and the news behind the news at the Weather Underground, all at wonderground.com. Jeff, quickly, how would you describe this blog for new users?
It's a weather and climate change blog that I write most days. During hurricane season, which is June through November, I tend to focus very heavily on what's going on in the Atlantic. And outside of that, I try and focus on important issues as far as weather and climate worldwide, and I will talk about the latest research findings from scientists studying climate change.
Jeff Masters, thank you so much.
Okay, Alex, pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. Following that interview, here is a sample from a blog post by Jeff Masters, December 28, 2010. He begins, quote, "The remarkable post-Christmas blizzard of 2010 has ended for the United States as the storm has trekked northward into Canada. The blizzard dropped epic amounts of snow during its rampage up the U.S. northeast coast Sunday and Monday, with an incredible 32 inches falling in Rahway, New Jersey, about 15 miles southwest of New York City. The highest populated areas of New Jersey received over 2 feet of snow, including Newark Airport, which received 24.1 inches. The blizzard of 2010 dumped 20.0 inches on New York City's Central Park, making it the sixth largest snowstorm for the city in recorded history and the second top 10 snowstorm this year. Remarkably, New York City has had 4 of its top 10 snowfalls in the past decade," end quote. And in that blog entry, Jeff Masters begins to list off the top 10 snowfalls of Central Park, kind of interesting, which range from 1888 to 2 in 2010. Later, he continues under this headline, quote, "An unusual number of top 10 storms for the Northeast in recent years. The Northeast has seen an inordinate number of top 10 snowstorms in the past 10 years, raising the question of whether this is due to random chance or a change in the climate. A study by Houston and Chagnon, 2009, on the top 10 heaviest snowfalls on record for each of the 121 major U.S. cities showed no upward or downward trend in these very heaviest snowfalls during the period 1948 to 2001. It would be interesting to see if they repeated their study using data from the past decade, if the answer would change. As I stated in my blog post, The United States of Snow, in February, bigger snowstorms are not an indication that global warming is not occurring. The old adage, it's too cold to snow, has some truth to it. And there is research showing the idea that the average climate in the U.S. is colder than optimal to support the heaviest snowfalls. For example, Chagnon et al. 2006 found that for the contiguous U.S. between 1900 and 2001, 61% to 80% of all heavy snowstorms of 6 inches or more occurred during winters with above normal temperatures. The authors also found that 61 to 85% of all heavy snowstorms of 6 inches or more occurred during winters that were wetter than average. The authors conclude, quote, "A future with wetter and warmer winters, which is one outcome expected, will bring more heavy snowstorms of 6 or more inches than in 1901 to 2000, end quote. The authors found that over the U.S. as a whole, there had been a slight but significant increase in heavy snowstorms of 6 or more inches than in the 1901 to 2000 period. If the climate continues to warm, we should expect an increase in heavy snow events for a few decades until the climate grows so warm that we pass the point where winter temperatures are at the optimum for heavy snow events," end quote. That's the kind of compact facts and analysis that keeps wonderblog.com in the top most visited internet sites in the world. Plus all the snappy graphs, the satellite shots we can't show you on radio, and by the way, Wonderblog is spelled W-U-N-D-E-R blog. While most mainstream weather reporters dodge the connections to climate change or even deny it, millions of people bail out of that to get the straight news from Jeff Masters and his co-conspirators at the Weather Underground. The truth will get out. I'm Alex Smith, and this is Radio EcoShock. Tracking the climate challenge, Radio EcoShock at ecoshock.org. News on the energy front is all over the map. Someday, I would like to be able to report the world will be burning fewer fossil fuels next year. But we cannot say that now. According to a Reuters Business Report, quote, oil demand growth jumped 2.2 million barrels per day in 2010, the biggest rise in 6 years, and forecast for an additional 1.5 million barrels per day of use in 2011, according to a Reuters poll, end quote. The world will burn even more oil, pushing up levels of greenhouse gases well past the already dangerous level. The bad news, good news coming out of that devastating flood in Queensland, Australia, is a tiny slowdown in world coal production. The Wall Street Journal reported December 30th, coal mines responsible for almost 25% of Australia's big climate-killing export have been flooded or isolated by flooding. Australia helps pollute the atmosphere by producing about a third of a billion tons of coal every year. Around 25% of that coal is temporarily halted now. The planet will catch a little bit of a break due to historic flooding, likely augmented by the same coal burning. Australia is being heavily damaged by its own polluting coal industry. The actual smokestacks are in China, producing consumer products for Western countries, Africa, South America, and the growing middle class in China itself. Now China has a new oil supply route, the first pipeline directly from Russia to northern China. According to BBC News, the pipeline between eastern Siberia and northeast China will carry 300,000 barrels a day. Russia, says the BBC, overtook Saudi Arabia as the world's largest oil producer in 2009, end quote. Little reported in Western newspapers outside business circles, China and Russia recently concluded a very significant agreement. Until now, almost all of the oil sold in the world is paid for in U.S. dollars. China and Russia have agreed to trade everything directly in their own currencies, bypassing the dollar. It is one more move away from the weakening U.S. dollar as the basis for international trade. Now the world's largest oil producer and the up-and-coming world's largest oil consumer have dumped the dollar. So it's a key question. Why did China decide to go with the car and the oil civilization rather than jumping ahead into clean energy? Why has consumerism triumphed in the East with all those brand names, even as we see resources running out and the environment severely threatened? We'll find out more in our next Radio EcoShock interview, The Chinese Consumers. We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. Get all our previous programs at our website, ecoshock.org.